Chapter 13. PubMed's thrilling discovery: there are three infallible ways of pleasing an author, and the three form a rising scale of compliment. 1. To tell him you have read one of his books. 2. To tell him you have read all of his books. 3. To ask him to let you read the manuscript of his forthcoming book. Number 1 admits you to his respect. Number 2 admits you to his admiration. Number 3 carries you clear into his heart. PubMed Wilson's calendar, as to the adjective. When in doubt, strike it out. PubMed Wilson's calendar, the twins arrived presently, and talk began. It flowed along chattily and sociably, and under its influence the new friendship gathered ease and strength. Wilson got out his calendar, by request, and read a passage or two from it, which the twins praised quite cordially. This pleased the author, so much that he complied gladly, when he asked him to lend them a batch of the work to read at home. In the course of their wide travels, they had found out that there are three sure ways of pleasing an author. They were now working the best of the three. There was an interruption now. Young Driscoll appeared, and joined the party. He pretended to be seeing the distinguished strangers for the first time, when they rose to shake hands. But this was only a blind, as he had already had a glimpse of them, at the reception, while robbing the house. The twins made mental note that he was smooth-faced and rather handsome, and smooth and undulatory in his movements, graceful, in fact. Angelo thought he had a good eye. Lugai thought there was something veiled and sly about it. Angelo thought he had a pleasant, free and easy way of talking. Lugai thought it was more so than was agreeable. Angelo thought he was a sufficiently nice young man. Lugai reserved his decision. Tom's first contribution to the conversation was a question which he had put to Wilson 100 times before. It was always cheerily and good-natured put, and always inflicted a little pang, for it touched a secret sore. But this time the pang was sharp, since strangers were present. Well, how does the law come on? Had a case yet? Wilson bit his lip, but answered, no, not yet, with as much indifference as he could assume. Judge Driscoll had generously left the law feature out of Wilson's biography which he had furnished to the twins. Young Tom laughed pleasantly, and said, Wilson's a lawyer, gentlemen, but he doesn't practice now. The sarcasm bit, but Wilson kept himself under control, and said without passion, I don't practice, it is true. It is true that I have never had a case, and have had to earn a poor living for 20 years as an expert accountant in a town, where I can't get a hold of a set of books, to untangle as often as I should like. But it is also true that I did myself well for the practice of the law. By the time I was your age, Tom, I had chosen a profession, and was soon competent to enter upon it. Tom winced. Never got a chance to try my hand at it, and I may never get a chance, and yet if I ever do get it, I shall be found ready, for I have kept up my law studies all these years. That's it. That's good grit. I like to see it. I've a notion to throw all my business your way. My business and your law practice ought to make a pretty gay team, Dave, and the young fellow laughed again. If you will throw, Wilson had thought of the girl in Tom's bedroom, and was going to say, if you will throw the surreptitious and disreputable part of your business my way, it may amount to something, but thought better of it and said, however, this matter doesn't fit well in a general conversation. All right, we'll change the subject. I guess you were about to give me another dig, anyway, so I'm willing to change. How's the awful mystery flourishing these days? Wilson's got a scheme for driving plain window glass panes out of the market, by decorating it with greasy finger marks, and getting rich by selling it at famine prices to the crowned heads over in Europe, to outfit their palaces with. Fetch it out, Dave. Wilson brought 3 of his glass strips, and said, I get the subject to pass the fingers of his right through his hair, so as to get a little coating of the natural oil on them, and then press the balls of them on the glass. a fine and delicate print of the lines in the skin results, and is permanent if it doesn't come in contact with something able to rub it off. You begin, Tom. Why, I think you took my finger marks once or twice before. Yes, but you were a little boy the last time, only about 12 years old. That's so. Of course, I've changed entirely since then, and variety is what the crowned heads want, I guess. He passed his fingers through his crop of short hair, and pressed them one at a time on the glass. Angelo made a print of his fingers on another glass, and Lugai followed with a third. Wilson marked the glasses with names and dates, and put them away. Tom gave one of his little laughs, and said, I thought I wouldn't say anything, but if variety is what you are after, you have wasted a piece of glass. The handprint of one twin is the same as the handprint of the fellow twin. Well, it's done now, and I like to have them both, anyway, said Wilson, returned to his place. But look here, Dave, said Tom, you used to tell people's fortunes too, when you took their finger marks. Dave's just an all-round genius, a genius of the first water, gentlemen. A great scientist running, to seed here in this village, a prophet with the kind of honor that prophets generally get at home, for here they don't give shucks for his scientifics, and they call his skull a notion factory. Hey, Dave, ain't it so? But never mind, he'll make his mark someday, finger mark, you know, hee. But really, you want to let him take a shy at your palms once. It's worth twice the price of admission, or your money's returned at the door. Why, he'll read your wrinkles as easy as a book, and not only tell you 50 or 60 things that's going to happen to you, but 50 or 60,000 that ain't. Come, Dave, show the gentleman what an inspired jack at all science we've got in this town, and don't know it. Wilson winced under this nagging, and not very courteous chaff, and the twins suffered with him and for him. They rightly judged, now, that the best way was to relieve him would be, to take the thing in earnest, and treat it with respect, ignoring Tom's rather overdone raillery. So Lugai said, we have seen something of palmistry in our wanderings, and know very well what astonishing things it can do. If it isn't a science, and one of the greatest of them too, I don't know what its other name ought to be. In the Orient, Tom looked surprised and incredulous. He said, that juggling a science? But really, you ain't serious, are you? Yes, entirely so. 4 years ago we had our hands read out to us, as if our plans had been covered with print. Well, do you mean to say there was actually anything in it? Asked Tom, his incredulity beginning to weaken a little. There was this much in it, said Angelo. Hat was told us of our characters, was minutely exact, we could have not have bettered it ourselves. Next, two or three memorable things that have happened to us were laid bare, things which no one present but ourselves could have known about. Why, it's rank sorcery! Exclaimed Tom, who was now becoming very much interested. And how did they make out with what was going to happen to you in the future? On the whole, quite fairly, said Luigi. Whoa, three of the most striking things foretold have happened since. Much the most striking one of all happened within that same year. Some of the minor prophecies have come true, some of the minor and some of the major ones have not been fulfilled yet, and of course may never be. Still, I should be more surprised if they failed to arrive than if they didn't. Tom was entirely sobered and profoundly impressed. He said, apologetically, Dave, I wasn't meaning to belittle that science. I was only chattering, I reckon I'd better say. I wish you would look at their palms. Come, won't you? Why, certainly, if you want me to. But you know I've had no chance to become an expert, and don't claim to be one. When a past event is somewhat prominently recorded in the palm, I can generally detect that, but minor ones often escape me, not always, of course, but often, but I haven't much confidence in myself when it comes to reading the future. I am talking as if palmistry was a daily study with me, but that is not so. I haven't examined half a dozen ads in the last half dozen years. You see, the people got to joking about it, and I stopped to let the talk die down. I'll tell you what we'll do, Count Luigi. I'll make a try at your past, and if I have any success there, no, on the whole, I'll let the future alone. That's really the affair of an expert. He took Luigi's hand. Tom said, "Wait, don't look yet, Dave. Count Luigi, here's paper and pencil. Set down that thing that you said was the most striking one that was foretold to you and happened less than a year afterward, and give it to me so I can see if Dave finds it in your hand." Luigi wrote a line privately and folded up the piece of paper and handed it to Tom, saying, "I'll tell you when to look at it if he finds it." Wilson began to study Luigi's palm, tracing lifelines, heart lines, head lines, and so on, and noting carefully their relations with the cobweb of finer and more delicate marks and lines that enmeshed them on all sides. He felt of the fleshy cushion at the base of the thumb, and noted its shape. He felt of the fleshy side of the hand between the wrist and the base of the little finger, and noted its shape also. He painstakingly examined the fingers, observing their form, proportions, and natural manner of disposing themselves when in repose. All this process was watched by the three spectators with absorbing interest, their heads bent together over Luigi's palm, and nobody disturbing the stillness with a word. Wilson now entered upon a close survey of the palm again, and his revelations began. He mapped out Luigi's character and disposition, his tastes, aversions, proclivities, ambitions, and eccentricities in a way which sometimes made Luigi wince and the others laugh, but both twins declared that the chart was artistically drawn and was correct. Next, Wilson took up Luigi's history. He proceeded cautiously and with hesitation now, moving his finger slowly along the great lines of the palm, and now and then halting it at a tiresome such landmark, and examining that neighborhood minutely. He proclaimed one or two past events, Luigi confirmed his correctness, and the search went on. Presently Wilson glanced up suddenly with a surprised expression. "Here is a record of an incident which you would perhaps not wish me to bring it out," said Luigi, good-naturedly. "Promise you shan't embarrass me." But Wilson still hesitated, and did not seem quite to know what to do. Then he said, "I think it is too delicate a matter to I believe I would rather write it, or whisper it to you, and let you decide for yourself, whether you want it talked out or not." "That will answer," said Luigi. "Write it." Wilson wrote something on a slip of paper, and handed it to Luigi, who read it to himself and said to Tom, "Unfold your slip and read it, Mr. Driscoll." Tom said, "It was prophesied that I would kill a man. It came true before the year was out." Apostrophe, Tom added, "Great Scott." Luigi handed Wilson's paper to Tom, and said, "Now read this one." Tom read, "You have killed someone, but whether man, woman, or child, I do not make out." Apostrophe, Caesar's ghost, commented Tom, with astonishment. "It beats anything that was ever heard of. Why, a man's own hand is his deadliest enemy. Just think of that, a man's own hand keeps a record of the deepest and fatalest secrets of his life, and is treacherously ready to expose himself to any black magic stranger that comes along. But what do you let a person look at your hand for, with that awful thing printed on it?" "Oh," said Luigi, reposefully, "I don't mind it. I killed the man for good reasons, and I don't regret it." "What were the reasons?" "Well, he needed killing." "I'll tell you why he did it, since he won't say himself," said Angelo, warmly. "He did it to save my life, that's what he did it for. So it was a noble act, and not a thing to be hid in the dark." So it was," said Wilson. "Oh, do such a thing. To save a brother's life is a great and fine action." Now come, said Luigi, it is very pleasant to hear you say these things, but for unselfishness, heroism, magnanimity, the circumstances won't stand scrutiny. You overlook one detail. Suppose I hadn't saved Angelo's life, what would have become of mine? If I had let the man kill him, wouldn't he have killed me too? I saved my own life, you see. Yes, that is your way of talking, said Angelo, but I know you. I don't believe you thought of yourself at all. I keep that weapon, yet that Luke I killed the man with, and I'll show it to you sometime. That incident makes it interesting, and it had a history before it came into Luigi's hands which adds to its interest. It was given to Luigi by a great Indian prince, the Gokower of Baroda, and it had been in his family two or three centuries. It killed a good many disagreeable people who troubled the hearthstone at one time or another. It isn't much to look at, except it isn't shaped like other knives, dirks, whatever it may be called here. I'll draw it for you. He took a sheet of paper, and made a rapid sketch. Here it is, a broad and murderous blade, with edges like a razor for sharpness. The devices engraved on it are the ciphers, names of its long Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.